Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, did you have a good holiday? Everything come out well? Good dinner? What do you think?
Everything was great. The best part about it was hockey was under the Christmas tree, right? We're 4 days away now. We're doing this on Monday, and on the 31st, the seven teams that weren't in the bubble open training camp with physicals and everything else, and you know, we're ready to go.
Yeah, Thursday can't come fast enough. We actually have a coach from one of those teams, Ralph Krueger from the Buffalo Sabres, will be jumping on with us in a little while here, Sean, and always great to catch up with Ralph, one of the best, most well-spoken coaches probably in all of professional sports across the world, I would probably imagine. He's that good, and he's got opinions on a lot of different things, so really good to catch up with Ralph. That interview is coming up shortly, but lots of news and notes going on, obviously, with training camps getting set to open for those seven teams that didn't return to play on Thursday. And one of those teams, the Ottawa Senators, making all kinds of noise, keeping you very busy with your editing skills as well, right? I mean, not only signing Tim Stützle to the entry-level deal, trading for Derek Stepan, acquiring Braden Coburn and Cedric Paquette. I mean, so much going on there with the Ottawa Senators. Pierre Dorion, not one that's resting over the holiday season at all.
No, he did not put his feet up and celebrate his presence and try out his new electronics, unless it was his new iPhone, because clearly he's been working the phones. Yeah. You know, I thought the most amazing thing was you had to take all the moves in concert, right? If you break them up, they're not as impressive, right? When he made that move late on the day after Christmas to obtain Stepan, you know, you're like, well, that's a pretty big price to pay, a second round pick. Yeah. I know they had a lot of them because of Carlson and everything else, but you're still like, and Derek's a good player and he's going to help that really young group out, but you're like, second round pick, you would have thought giving, you know, some cap relief would have cut them a little bit of a deal. But then he gets the second round pick coming back, plus the two players in the trade with Tampa Bay 2 days later. So, you know, as a total package, and then you add Stützle, who you knew was coming, and has been pretty good in the World Juniors so far. You know, that's a team that's not going to make the playoffs most likely in that division, because it's just chaos.
It's loaded. Yeah.
But they're getting better fast.
You know what I love about them right now, and these moves that Dorion's making, is the veteran players that they're bringing in. They have so many young guys that they want to come along, and so many more that aren't even in the Ottawa Senators system yet that they eventually will be through draft picks. But you can't rush guys to the NHL. You especially can't rush guys to the NHL in a shortened season where you're not going to get a lot of practice time, and you're playing, you know, fast and furious games against the same opponents who easily can figure you out if you're not experienced. They're buying time for a lot of these guys. They're buying time with them with Braden Coburn, and he will help. Let's even what if he plays with Thomas Chabot? So he'll help Thomas Chabot, because Braden Coburn's an experienced defenseman in the NHL, right? Cedric Paquette is a grinding, gritty, experienced bottom six forward. Derek Stepan has scored big goals in the NHL. He's going to help the younger players on that team. And then you toss in Gudbranson and Dadonov and Galchenyuk, who they add, and of course, Matt Murray. They're buying time for a lot of these young guys, understanding that they have time, the Ottawa Senators, that expectations are going to remain low this season, and they will be a much better team. They'll be a much harder team to play. They'll be in more games. They'll be in a lot of one-goal games. They're going to get a ton of experience. Their young guys will get some experience too, and learning from the older guys. It all just makes sense, and they're the team that's perfect to take on a, you know, you want to go, hey, we're not in your division this season. We'll help you out, Tampa Bay, right? We'll get you your cap relief. Give us our second-round pick. Oh, by the way, we'll also get two players that we can insert right into our lineup.
Yeah, and the other thing, when you mentioned all those older players, except for Murray, none of them are long-term commitments.
No.
They're all bridge guys. They're not tied to any of them. And the other thing is, you may beat the Ottawa Senators, but they're going to beat you up.
They're going to work. You got to work for it this year.
Yeah, and I don't mean they're going to fight you. They're going to beat you up. They're going to be a buzzsaw to play against. When you look at all these players, they reflect the personality that their coach wants, right? They're going to grind you. They're going to work the boards. There's some skill involved there, but a lot of, especially a lot of their veterans are guys that are just gritty and they're going to exact a price. You know, you want to walk out with 2 points. Okay, maybe it's going to happen, but you're going to know when you're sitting in the hotel waiting to play again the next night or 2 nights later that it's not going to be as easy the next time. So that's the other thing I like about them is I just think physically they're going to be competitive and they're going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Let's not forget, in a little bit here, we're going to get to Ralph Krueger, Buffalo Sabres coach. He is our guest on the podcast today. But let's talk a little bit about the Tampa Bay Lightning because they've made a lot of moves recently too. The team that just traded with Ottawa, giving up Coburn and Paquette and the second round pick to get the cap relief. Look, they're going to have over $16 million on long-term injured reserve when you factor in Marian Gaborik and Anders Nilsson, plus the big one, Nikita Kucherov. And it helped. I also find it laughable that people were like, well, you know, they found the way to circumvent that cap, right? Because, well, they put a guy on LTIR. They put one of the best players in the league on LTIR. And that is a blow. I talked to Julien Brisebois last night, Sunday night, and we were talking about how they are, you know, cap compliant now. He managed to do it. They signed Sorelli and Chernak and Sergachev and still managed to do it. But what a huge loss it is to have Nikita Kucherov on LTIR. The one thing I brought this up with Julien Brisebois last night, and Sean, I want to get your opinion on it. This is a team that just won the Stanley Cup basically without Steven Stamkos. So don't you think that kind of helps them in understanding what they can do now without Nikita Kucherov?
Oh, of course. They have the mental toughness to get through something like that. Nobody's hanging their heads. And B, you know, they have the skill to survive it, right? Steven Stamkos, as Brisebois told you, is healthy. There's no concerns with him coming into camp. So you get a 100% Steven Stamkos, who's well-rested, you know, more so than maybe some of the other guys on that team. You think about some of their other talent, really young. I think when the uproar about Kucherov was the way that it was worded, right? In that he won't play in the regular season. And now you're going to see a guy on day one of the playoffs. This is what everybody's imagining. No more salary cap. Hey, Kucherov, he's all better. Here we go. Let's have a good one. I think that was kind of what some of the concern was. But look, I mean, the kid's having hip surgery, and we know that it's going to take a long time. You know, I think it's he's done for the regular season. We'll see what the playoffs happen. I think people outside of hockey or outside of the Tampa Bay Lightning looked at it and said, oh, how convenient, his rehab is going to take us to the end of the regular season. Great. Yeah. But I don't know that that's the case. I don't know that it's a given, but I can't wait till he comes back and plays with Gaborik. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that would be something. Actually, I was talking to a buddy of mine. He's like, if Gaborik wants to ever come back, maybe this is the team he'll come back. I'm like, I don't think they're going to allow him to come back. They don't have the cap space to have him come back.
He'll come back for the playoffs too.
He'll come back for the playoffs too. Look, it does look convenient. I get it. But no, these guys having major surgery and they want him in the lineup. As Julien was telling me, like, it's going to be hard to make the playoffs regardless. And now you don't have to do it without Kucherov. They want him in the lineup. He's a very important part of that team. Another one, Mike Hoffman signing a PTO with the St. Louis Blues. I think a lot of people figured the Blues were a good landing spot for Hoffman. I don't think a lot of people thought it would be on a PTO. But there's also a little bit of cap finagling going on here, too, I think, because they are going to put Alex Steen on LTIR and probably Vladimir Tarasenko, too.
Yeah, and they're going to wait until it's closer to the opening day because that's when they get the maximum relief. And you know, I'm so glad that I'm a writer/editor and not a capologist because A, I'm horrible at math, and B, the mental gymnastics of trying to figure all those things out. But it must be awesome to be in that profession and like have that aha moment and be like, I figured it out. I've put all the pieces of the puzzle together and this is how we get this guy and we don't lose anybody, because they're not going to, right? They didn't have to part with any kind of veteran presence or anything like that. You know, obviously Steen walking away from hockey is difficult and we wish him all the best in whatever future endeavors he has. One of the brightest hockey minds that I've certainly run across in my years in the league, and I know whatever he does in the future will be great. But if you're Mike Hoffman, right, and you go into free agency, you know you're going into free agency midway through last year, and you're like, oh man, the sky's the limit, the money, the term.
Yeah, not now.
And now your whole world's been turned upside down. COVID, a flat cap, everything that's happened. Teams have no flexibility, and your offers were minimal. You know, look, the PTO in theory allows him to continue negotiating with anybody in the league. He's not bound to the Blues. It's just a mechanism that allows him to come to camp. But obviously, if he's showing up and he's going to go through what he's going to go through with them, that's his first choice. And as soon as they can LTIR it, he'll be signed. But it's a 1-year deal. It's a prove it deal. And Mike Hoffman, you know, shouldn't have to be doing prove it deals at this point in his career.
No, here's the other. It's you don't want to think this way too, but Mike Hoffman's going to go to the St. Louis Blues camp with no guarantee, right? And he's going to work his tail off likely in that environment. Not that he needs to get the guarantee, because he's proven it enough, as you said. But, I mean, there's a risk there for Mike Hoffman. No guarantee. What if you get hurt, right? There's a risk there that's going to be very interesting. I mean, I hope we don't have to see that. But he is taking on a major risk by taking a PTO with the Blues. I wonder if there was a contract out there for him and a team just didn't want it. I don't know. And it makes a lot of sense for him to go to St. Louis. They need the goal scoring. But there's a risk there for Mike Hoffman.
And there's a reward. Let's not forget, if you're going to list Stanley Cup favorites.
Oh, yeah.
I put the team that won it 2 years ago near the top, especially when they add a scorer like Mike Hoffman. And you know, they can come back from what plagued them coming out of the restart and into the bubble last year. You know, I don't think that's representative of who the St. Louis Blues are. And you know, they've lost Pietrangelo, but they added Krug. Like, when I look at the West, they're still, you know, and we went over this in the last podcast, mm-hmm. but they're still the cream of the crop with a couple other teams out West, you know, Colorado and Vegas, you know, all in the same division, by the way. Like you might not make the money you thought you were going to make, but there's very few places he could go with a better chance of gaining the glory that he would love to gain.
No, there's no question about it. And Sean, lastly, before we get to Ralph Krueger, who is our guest on the podcast, the Buffalo Sabres coach, we saw the announcement today from Henrik Lundqvist that he needs to have open heart surgery. We knew that Henrik had already announced that he was not going to be playing this season for the Washington Capitals because he had to take care of a heart condition. And now he announces the biggie that he's going to have open heart surgery. And I had to sit back in my chair, you know, when I saw that. It was, you know, you hear heart condition, you think, okay, this guy's not playing, he's going to work through this. This is open heart surgery. This is no joke. And I wish him nothing but the best in his surgery and his recovery. And like, the Capitals went out and they brought in Craig Anderson on a PTO, and he's going to try to be their second goalie with Ilya Samsonov. But just got to wish Henrik Lundqvist nothing but the best here.
Oh, it's so sobering, especially this time of year, right? It's about family, and it's about, you know, hoping for the best in the new year, and 2021 being at least 20, if not 200 times better than 2020 was. and you know, to think of what Henrik faces, right? And to think about the fact that he's probably in the top 1% of, you know, the most physically fit, well taken care of humans in the world. Right, he's a professional athlete. Everything is taken care of, right? That's who he is, and to have that taken away, it's got to be heartbreaking to not be able to do what you want to do because your body won't allow you to do it, especially for somebody as competitive as Henrik, you know, and the excitement that he had going to a new challenge in Washington, it's crushing. It was hard to deal with this morning. You know, you don't know Henrik, but you can put yourself in his shoes relatively easily and realize that what a tough road he has ahead. But like you said, you know, there's more mountains to climb, and he's going to climb them. And you know, having watched Henrik for more than a decade very closely, I don't think there's any mountain he can't climb. So best of luck to him.
Yeah, I'm not going to doubt him. That's for sure. So, yeah, there you have it. Lots of different news and notes, and we didn't even hit on all of it right there. But we've teased it enough. So, Sean, let's get to our guest. We were able to catch up with Ralph Krueger, the head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. Caught up with him for a while there, touched on a lot of different topics. So here's that interview with Ralph Krueger. Ralph, thank you so much for jumping on with us. Let's start right here. I mean, you're getting going here this week, Thursday. First day on the ice is Friday. You got Thursday physicals and all that. Busy week, planning for everything. I mean, what's your level of excitement? How are you feeling as you prepare for this now?
Well, I think you summed it up by using the words planning and excitement. So on the one side, the reality of the protocols, the processes, for us, not having been in the playoffs, imagining games without fans and what it takes to, you know, to run a good game day. All of these things are being planned and looked at by the coaching staff right now. But I can't help to feel excitement when we walk away from the reality of our planning and the structure that we need to put into place. Filling that structure with practices and games and playing in front of our fans, even though it's not live in the building, we know they will be glued to the screens. Everybody is really pumped and ready to go here.
What's been the biggest challenge for you? I mean, it's all new, right? You don't know what anything's going to be like and how it's going to work. So as you try and get your head around what could be, what's been the biggest challenge?
I think the biggest challenge is to make sure that you don't look too far in advance and be extremely flexible in your mindset of, you know, prepare to see hurdles every day, to need to jump over them, to keep the players in a space where they have as few surprises as possible. Keep those expectations in line that there will be surprises along the way. But I would say the biggest challenge is really just, you know, when I look at our team as being able to concentrate once the puck is dropped and the games begin, that they're fully focused on the task at hand. It will be a challenge with all the distractions initially until we get used to this new world.
This is obviously going to be a way different training camp for so many reasons, Ralph, but one of them is it's short. I mean, you guys get a few extra days than the other 24 teams, but it's still short. There's no preseason games. So how do you plan and what do you do to then evaluate through training camp when you're just going to be going up against yourselves and you don't have as many, you don't have as many practices. You don't have those preseason games to really, you know, get a handle on what maybe some young players or combinations that you like. How do you plan for that?
Well, first, it's helpful. My past, which most people know, comes from the national team world. And we would often have 2-3 weeks of training and practices without any games before we got into exhibition game. I'm used to this kind of a space and creating game-like situations within the 13 days that we're going to be on the ice together is going to be extremely important. Beginning on the 14th of January means we get another day that direction too. It's going to be taking away the time and space that the players have had with their 10 months of training. Now, you know, it's been, most of them have had outstanding programs run by our strength and conditioning coaches, and they are definitely in good shape, but now it's about hockey shape. And so for us, it's going to be important to create those kind of situations on a regular basis to have them, look at each other in the eyes and make sure we deal with contact, make sure we deal with speed and pace. And it is also, we're going to have 2 gold blue games that will run as if we had exhibition games on those dates. We have enough players in camp to run exhibition games of sorts, which will be really helpful as we get ready to play the real games. But many different creative ways here to simulate what the players will be experiencing once we play.
Ralph, how much in that you talked about your experience with the national team, but as a sportsman throughout your life, you know, your involvement in soccer, your involvement in European hockey, the Sabres familiarity with the Bills and all of that, all of those entities have already gone through what you're about to go through. How much have you used those resources to kind of get yourself ready for what you're going to face?
It's been outstanding for me. I've been in Europe quite a bit in the break time and extremely close still with Southampton Football Club and the processes there and the coaching staff, what they're up to and how they've dealt with it. My son plays in the Swiss League. They're more than halfway through their season. They've been quarantined a few times, so I can see where that occurred, why it occurred, how we could defend against it. And of course, the Bills, like you've mentioned, will be extremely helpful to tap into. Sean McDermott and I have a good relationship, and I'll be able to feed into him. And, nobody's going to be perfect in this process, but we're just trying to do it as well as any other team. And all of these experiences help me to see especially where the points of contact can be and where it can get dangerous, and what happens and how we can prevent that. And we, you know, we have protocols that will be even over and above some of them the NHL is asking for because of the experiences I've been able to take with me here.
Yeah, that is actually quite interesting. I had thought about too. It's a good question from Sean, just the idea of how many experiences you have. One thing is, though, that's changed, obviously, is the division, right? So the division formats has changed. Everything about that's different. You got a lot of teams that are not normally in your division, now in your division. How does that impact the pre-scouts? How does that impact how your coaching staff handles things where you know, you're going to be facing teams where you do face them, but not as often as you will now. What's the challenge there?
Well, first of all, our video coaches have to love it because there's a lot less teams to break down and analyze. We will be living in a division which we are nothing but excited about. I mean, there are no nights off in our division. Extremely experienced groups we'll be playing against. We are going to grow very quickly in this division, and everybody knows how it is. We do have travel that is extremely conducive to what we want to do with our training. We don't have long road trips or time zones, so let's make that to our advantage. But I think more than anything, you will have seven seasons within the season where the challenges are definitely there to try to win each and every one of those best of eights that you play. Mm-hmm. And how you approach that, there's going to be a lot of tactical adjustments going on specialty teams, 5-on-5 between the coaches. I know them all so well too. You couldn't pick a group of coaches that I have that I know better. And I'm really excited personally about the challenge, but I know the team is too. And it is different because you do build your team quite a bit with the mindset of who is in your division and what do we need to do now to stay ahead of Toronto and Florida and Tampa, and how do we beat Tampa Bay and Boston, who we couldn't beat last year. And suddenly this remix happens and you need to make the best of it. And that's what we're doing right now. But I have to say, we are nothing but excited about that challenge.
Do you see, since you made a great point, how do you beat the teams in your division? As you look across the league since the restart's been announced, do you see with some of the signings that have been made that teams are actually doing that, where they're looking at their opposition and they're saying, I need a gritty guy like in Montreal, or I need a scorer, whatever it is. But it's being based on division, where maybe that move's not made if they're playing across the whole league.
Yeah, just taking the example, Buffalo versus Tampa Bay, you know, we really had trouble getting by them last year. And I can't tell you the specifics strategically, but there were definitely situations in the games where I as a coach felt that we weren't able to deal with certain elements. And I believe the way we've strengthened our lineup, if you look at our group, we have certainly improved in those areas, which will help us also in the division we're in now. But you know, when I look at Hall, Stahl, Eek, and Reeder, Irwin, we've got a lot of experience there with players that understand to play on both sides of the puck. They understand what it takes to win, and they're gonna, you know, we were able to retain all the players that we wanted to retain in our lineup. So it certainly makes us a stronger team. But I agree with you. We did make some of those changes according to the opposition in our division, but it will help us here too.
Yeah, and you mentioned Taylor Hall, and I wanted to get there. Ralph, what did his signing, the fact that he chose Buffalo too, and you have a strong relationship with him, but what did his signing do for your feeling in the group and how the group feels? Like when you talk to your players now, as opposed to when you talked to them before Taylor got there, is there a different mentality?
It definitely changed the confidence level of the group, and it was an extremely important decision from our side and from Taylor's combined to be able to show that what we're building here, the culture that we've put into place, is one that wants to be competitive with top level of the National Hockey League. And we know it doesn't happen overnight. We know you don't get it given to you free. The one thing we know about the National Hockey League is it's fine margins that make the difference. The differential between the top and the bottom teams in this league is as small as any sport, any professional sport I've ever been involved with. And it's finding those percentage points. And Taylor is somebody that not only on ice adds extreme value, but off ice and just what you've already mentioned, that overall swagger of the group and the belief of us being able to, you know, we have a confidence out of last season that we can win against any team on a given day, but we just seem to lack in the depths to finish those scores off. And now with Taylor, that is one of those unique players in the league that can decide a game on his own. That's a difference maker on a regular basis. And everybody knows that Jack is one of those players. And the combination of those two is something that we really look forward to seeing in action.
You talked a lot about culture and you've always been big on culture. You know, whenever you speak, I saw you speak to coaches when you were in Sweden a couple of years ago, and your whole speech was actually about developing a culture within a team. Yeah. It's a unique situation here because the players haven't been together. They haven't skated during the summer. You've introduced a lot of new pieces and a lot of really important voices in Hall and Stahl and guys like that. Have you thought about how you're going to accelerate the development of the culture that you want with so many new pieces?
So believe me, we've been extremely active these last 10 months. So number one, we've communicated closely with our group, and we didn't kill them with Zoom or communication, but we certainly stayed close. And our strength and conditioning coaches were in permanent contact with their fitness support and with the players directly. We as coaches had multiple Zoom meetings. I had personal meetings with each and every player at different multiple times throughout the break. And through that medium where the players feel so very comfortable with, I don't think I've ever had as many good one-on-one talks as I did on Zoom a month after the season. They were the best exit meetings I ever had. And one of the things was they were at home, they were comfortable, they were in a safe environment. They feel really comfortable with speaking over 1 year old. I'm still getting used to it, but they love that. And I came out of those exit meetings thinking, wow, I think I'm going to do this next year. So it's we built on that through the summer and into the fall. And so I believe we've already taken some big steps in bringing the groups together. They have been communicating with each other. I know that Taylor, as an example, was training in the same location with Jeff Skinner and was in constant contact with Jack through the summer after his signing. So the guys have already interacted. We aren't starting at square zero. Like 20 years ago, it would have been zero, right? You'd be coming in and going, how do I bring these guys together? We're already a long way along in the conversation with the new players. We placed and laid this culture of what we expect and how we want to operate right there on the table. And we've underlined that throughout the summer. So they know that. But I do agree with you. It will be difficult. There's going to be a lot of 6-foot distancing going on. Uh-huh. A lot of meetings where you don't have that camaraderie in the locker room right off the hop like you might like to have. Many players in multiple rooms early in training camp. It'll be tough to bring them into the same space. So it's going to take a lot of creativity from the coaching staff to interconnect the guys and to have us synergize by the 14th of January. But we're going to work hard at it. And I just want to let you know we're off to a good start.
I think, Ralph, you mentioned something that was quite interesting there when you said you might try to do these types of meetings over Zoom next year too, because it works so well, the players are comfortable. And it does lead to the question, that is one example. Are there other examples of things that because of the pandemic, because of being forced to be this way, that are going to change now because you're finding things to be better? You know, is it coaches meetings too? Is it, you know, just how you handle other players and meetings with players even in season if they're in a more comfortable location rather than sitting across from you at a desk, which could be, you know, I mean, that could be challenging for a player. Are you finding there are more and more things that, you know, you're going to decide, hey, this is better to do it this way, and I would have never done it this way otherwise?
Yeah, I really believe that a lot of the teaching is going to happen differently now. So we used to try to get a player after practice, you know, you send a message to him in the weight room or you get him in the locker room and then he's got a appointment for lunch, but yet you want to get a meeting in. And it was always kind of squeezing it in an already high-paced schedule. And we're going to play 56 games in 114 days. So there's not going to be a lot of time on those off days to do things. And the guys might want to get home. So the new way might be that Donnie Granato, our forward coach, sets up a meeting with Eric Stahl at 5 at night and says, hey, 15 minutes, let's go on Zoom. I got some clips. Let me show you to them. I do imagine that type of pattern, or the guys go back to the hotel, they're in their room, you're in your room. There are going to be many things that we take out of this stretch of 10 months here that will be, you know, we again have to be careful how we use technology, that we don't lose that personal touch. But there's certain things that I can see already will be helpful in teaching them when the time and space is right for them versus just jamming things in, you know? So yes, my answer to your question is yes, there will be a lot of different ways to do things. And above all, you know, everybody in our group is so excited to get going. You know, we miss the game so very much, and it is truly what we all love. And when the puck drops, it's still the same game, but how we're going to get there and how we can teach and how we can communicate, we have found new tools and we will put them into play.
How difficult is it going to be just in general for players to make an impression, right, in a short camp? Normally you have a few games and there's always one or two guys that come out of nowhere and all of a sudden they're on the opening day roster and they make a contribution. That process, I would assume, is going to be more difficult. One of the players that I think about that would have an awesome chance this year is Dylan Cousins, who's playing for Canada in the World Juniors. If they make it to the end, they play, I think it's on January 5th. You guys open on the 13th. He would have to quarantine, I would assume, if he's coming to camp at all. That clearly hurts him. But there's going to be other players, maybe depth players or whatever. Does it become a more difficult process? As a coach, what do you say to those players to give them hope that they can still make an impression?
Well, first of all, we have a new world here with the six-man taxi squad. So you're going to have a larger roster traveling with the team, practicing with the team. These players can at any point in time be called up into the starting group and or play. So that is unique, and it is still uncertain whether the American League will be playing or not playing. We all know there's still question marks in the air there, so that would change the game. But a player like Dylan, we could play him for 7 games for sure before we need to make a decision on him. So that puts him into the mix in some way, shape, or form. We all have to be realistic that depth charts are going to matter this year. With the pace of games that I've already mentioned here, the 56 games in that short period of time, with the challenges that could come up with positive testing, we need to look at that in the eye and see it as a possibility. We hope it doesn't happen, but we need to be prepared for that. So I think you need to be looking beyond the obvious 4 lines and 7D of every team. You need to look 1.5 lines deeper and at least 3-4D deeper, and you're going to expect to play all those guys during the year. So it is exciting to know that Casey Mittelstadt had a fantastic finish in the American League. We've got Ruotsalainen coming over. He was leading the Finnish league in scoring for a while. We've got players like Dylan Cousins. And on defense with Irwin and Davidson, we've got some new guys in the mix. Bryson was outstanding in the American League last year in the second half and is also exciting for us. So somewhere along the line, I feel we'll need everybody. But the decision on Dylan, we won't have to make that till well into February. So no rush on that. We're excited about the good start that he's had. And wish all our players playing there in the world all the best.
You know, Ralph, and I guess it speaks a little bit to the depth issue as well, but I mean, goaltending is so vitally important. We know that in this league, it's the biggest difference maker. You guys added Hall, Stahl, I mean, Irwin, Reeder. I mean, you made some nice key additions of veteran players who will absolutely help you, should absolutely help you up front, but the goaltending is still the same.
Yeah.
Do you believe, and I imagine you do, that Linus Ullmark is ready to take another step in his career this season to be what we now do, and I'll put air quotes around it, a bona fide number one?
Yeah. Well, we definitely feel that Linus wasn't rated and ranked as high as well as he played last year. And his injury in January, you know, falling out for about a month was certainly a part of the overall impression that he left. And Hutton was dealing with some medical issues that we've been able to clear up. And, you know, we're optimistic in the character that he has and the fight that he has in him, that when you look at the good games that he had and the way we started the season last year, we started on the shoulders of Hutton. We believe in this pair, and let's let them go to work and let's let them confirm what we believe. And again, feeling you know, we're feeling quite confident with the overall balance and the group and the role players that we've been able to put into place, including the goalies.
When you look at your defense, it's young defense,
yes,
across the league. And you know, the common wisdom, and as a coach, you can probably disabuse me of this now because the league's changed, but it takes the longest for a defenseman to develop. And you look at your core group of six, and they were really young, and they took some lickings at times in the past 2 years. Do you feel that as a group, and especially at the high end, that they've kind of learned their lessons and they're ready to blossom now? When, you know, you look at, when you look at players like Dahlin and Ristolainen and those type of players.
Yeah. And I think after you mentioned Dahls and Risto, you need to mention Montour, Joki Haru. You know, the experience of McCabe and the character of him. We like Irwin coming in as a character defenseman, helping our PK. And Colin Miller, you know, is for us, he's adjusted to what we need him to do here. He came from Vegas, where he had very emotional experiences, and he has taken on Buffalo as a home. And Davidson also has some good NHL experience. But we do believe that starting six that we had last year is going to go to another level. They've all put on strength through the summer. They're all young enough to still add some poundage. And we're excited actually about the physical development that's happened in that group. And you'll see it in Rasmus Dahlin. He's got a lot more muscle on his body. It's going to be hopefully the longest break he ever has in his career. And we feel he's really used it well. So we like the way this group skates. We like its speed. We like its aggressiveness and its hunger to gap, and also the way it can add to the offense. So we did stick with this group out of the main reason that we did believe there's another gear in there that is ready to happen, because of the reason you mentioned, that they're quite young still.
Well, Ralph, we definitely have taken up a lot of your time, so we won't take up any more. We definitely appreciate you hopping on with us, and cannot wait to see you guys get started, because that means the NHL season's around the corner. Thanks a lot, Ralph.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Sean. And greetings to all the hockey fans out there. We're going to be back at it soon. Isn't that great? Yeah. All the best. Have a smooth ride into 2021.
Well, Sean, it's always great to catch up with Ralph Krueger. I can talk to the guy all day long. He's got great perspective on so many different things. And one of the things he did bring up, and you brought it up with him, was tailoring your team to the division, right? And I think maybe the Montreal Canadiens have done that a little bit with the signing of Corey Perry on Monday today. 1 year, $750,000. Need a little bit more, shall we say, feistiness in front of the net. Maybe a little cross-checking in front of the net, if you will. A little annoyance in front of the net. And they're going to get that from Corey Perry, who, by the way, plays very well in the playoffs. And I think that they are a playoff team, and clearly they do as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the price is right. The term is right. You know, they have a book on him. You know, just go back and look at the playoffs last year, right? Everybody was talking about the demise of Corey Perry, and his career was over, and, you know, what a mistake it was to sign him. And then, you know, the playoffs come, and he's an integral part of a team that makes it to the Stanley Cup final, right? Scored a huge double overtime goal, you know, plays that North-South in-your-face game, you know, will push to the very limits to win a game. Right. And I think when you look at that Montreal team, it's a much better team than it was when it went to the playoffs last year, and when it upset the Penguins. But they're still missing that element. Right. You go down that lineup and you're like, well, who are you afraid to play against? Who's that guy who you say, oh? And again, let's think about the fact that you're going to play back to back or three and four nights against some of these teams. Like, do you want to see Corey Perry three times in 72 hours?
Well, no. And you think about, think about how annoying it's going to be for goaltenders that on one shift, they could have Brendan Gallagher right in front of them, or on one power play, they can have Brendan Gallagher right in front of them. And then the next shift or the next power play unit comes out and it's Corey Perry right in front of you. Or, you know, just that alone, I think, will make them a far more challenging team to play against just because they're going to get in the faces of goaltenders, and that will rattle defensemen. That will rattle forwards. It will also obviously rattle goaltenders, and it might end up taking a guy or two off his game, and now you get a power play out of it. And, you know, there's so many different factors there. It's funny, Sean, though. I think that the Canadians are, and I tweeted this today, I think they're arguably the most improved team this offseason with the additions that they have made in order to become a better team instantly, meaning veteran additions, right? Josh Anderson, Joel Edmondson, now Corey Perry, you know, Jake Allen, of course, and you know, and they're, you know, Tyler Toffoli, right? And I kind of got laughed at a little bit, and, you know, people are just shooting me down there on social media. A lot of Leafs fans, by the way, are shooting me down on social media. Surprise, surprise. But I think this signing fits perfectly with what Montreal is looking to do. I think it makes them a little bit better. Maybe Corey Perry adds that 6, 7, 8, 9 goals that they didn't score last year because of the way he plays, gets him an extra power play or two, and, you know, gives up one or two as well. But I think they are arguably the most improved team in the league, and I think they're even better now with Corey Perry.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm shocked.
Shocked.
Shocked,
I tell you.
That you receive some vitriol on social media. this to me, this never happens. I don't know.
No, it's the first time.
I don't know about your polarizing personality, Dan, that causes this, but otherwise there is never any vitriol on social media. It's a very happy place. Yeah. But yeah, no, and the other thing, those last four guys you mentioned as the additions, what's the one thing they all have in common? They've all won a cup.
They've won, yeah.
They've all won a cup. And Montreal did not have a player on its roster that won a cup. And now they have four.
Yeah.
And that's true. Huge. That's huge in the room. That's huge, you know, in a season that's going to be more trying than any season any of these players have ever undergone, to have that guy who's like, you know, other than the COVID stuff and, you know, positives and whatever might come out of that, that guy who's been like, I've been through that. We did that when we were in Dallas. This is what we did. When we were in Anaheim, this is what we did when we won. You know, when we were in St. Louis, this is what we did when the earth was falling apart at the beginning of the year and we couldn't stop a puck and it looked like everything was going to end. And then we ended up winning the Stanley Cup. Like, how reassuring is that going to be in February when Montreal's in the middle of chaos and the whole world's turning against them? And all of a sudden Jake Allen's like, dude, we were in last place.
Yeah. They have a coach who's won the cup too. Who's been there, you know? So that matters too. I agree with you. I agree 100%. I think they are the most improved team. And the offseason. Forget the arguable, okay? Come at me on social media if you'd like.
That's D Rosen NHL.
Yeah, at D Rosen NHL. So there are 7 teams that get into work on Thursday, probably first day on the ice Friday after physicals and whatnot. We talked about, obviously, Ottawa at the top. We clearly talked about the Buffalo Sabres with Ralph Kruger. The team that intrigues me so much of these 7 teams that get going this week, San Jose Sharks. They have a lot of veteran talent. We talked about a little bit last week with Nick Hotsanika too, but is it one last kick at the can type of veteran talent? And what about the challenge that they're going to face being that they have to have training camp in Scottsdale? And I think, and I have to double check it, but I think 7 or 8 of their first games are road games because they're not 100% sure when or if they'll be able to open at SAP Center in San Jose, or if they're going to have to play home games in a neutral site somewhere else or in another NHL building. So they are a very intriguing team to me, especially also with their goaltending, because they have Marty Jones and they have Devan Dubnyk. Is it good enough? I mean, can Dubnyk bounce back after a really tough personal and professional year? They're a very intriguing team to me.
They are. And then you know, you look at their defense. Is Eric Karlsson healthy? You know, what's Brent Burns going to do? But you know, look, coaches are paid to put a positive spin on it, but I thought it was, you know, pretty enlightening that they were basically like, this is great. We're going away for camp. Yeah. And then I think it's 10 of 12 that they play on the road while they see if they can get back to San Jose and play their games in the Shark Tank. And this buys them, you know, kind of like when teams open a new arena and they can't go home right away because they're still painting and putting in the wires. But basically they were like, you know, this is great. If there's anything I could ask for my team this year would be to get them away because like we talked about with Ralph, there's no opportunity to build chemistry, right? Because everything's going to come at them so fast. The opportunity is a little better to build chemistry if you put those 45 guys in a hotel in Arizona and they have no place to go, nothing, right? And they're going to have to sit around and they're going to have, it's going to be like being in a bubble for the most part. And we talked about how that bubble was conducive to building team chemistry as teams went into the playoffs. It's going to be the same thing here for the Sharks, where they're going to be able to be together, you know, almost nonstop. And some of those team building exercises that you're not going to be able to have for other teams because of COVID protocols, they may have the opportunity to have. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that is the positive spin. You're right. Doug Wilson talked about that too. The bubble can make you, but the bubble can break you. You know, there is that other side of it that you can get sick of it. You're away from normalcy. You're away from your family. It gnaws at you. It grinds at you. And, you know, that affects you personally. It affects your mentality. And then it eventually could impact you on the ice. So we will see how that goes. But that's part of why I think they are so intriguing, because nothing, we talk about how this is a different type of season coming up. Nothing about the start of this season is going to be normal for the San Jose Sharks.
No, it's not. And it's not going to be normal for anybody. I think the team that interests me the most out of these teams, you know, that were the non-bubble teams, the seven teams that didn't go to Toronto or Edmonton, might be the Devils, right? Like, you know, I think it's Buffalo, but we've talked a lot about
Buffalo. We've talked a lot about Buffalo. And Ottawa, too, is, yeah, of the five that we haven't hit on so much.
Yeah, I think to me it's the Devils, right? Like, what do they do? Like, who's Jack Hughes? Who's he going to be? And I don't know if this year's fear, right? Like, we're like, oh, last year, you know, rookie year, you know, you got to kind of write that one off and, you know, there's more there. But how do you judge a player this year? Right. Like, other than if he showed up at camp and he wasn't ready to play, like if he struggles again this year, there's five or six strikes against them. Right. Mm-hmm. The year's not normal. It's compressed. You know, you couldn't work out like you wanted to work out. You know, there's no preparation. He's never sat for this long in his whole career. You know, so who is he? You know, is Nico Hischier better than what we've seen? Do they have enough around him? And you know, is Mackenzie Blackwood the goalie for them, right? I think he is, but again, you know, we need to see all these things. So I think I would be most interested in seeing what, out of all those teams, what the Devils do, and maybe if you had to pick a team that was going to make the playoffs out of those seven, maybe that's who I pick.
See, I'm the opposite way, because I look at the Devils and I say they're like, in a sense, they're like Ottawa. They've added a lot to their lineup. You know, they're like Buffalo. They've added a lot to their lineup, but I give them almost no chance of making the playoffs, especially in that division. You know, that's a huge jump that you're asking from Jack Hughes to take, the big jump to ask from Nico Hischier. You've got to see a jump from those guys, but I mean, they're clearly better in net with Corey Crawford pushing Mackenzie Blackwood. They're better on the back end if Ryan Murray can stay healthy and Dmytro Kulikov can stay healthy. Andreas Johnsson's a nice pickup. What do they make about some of their young players like a Ty Smith? Is he going to come in and make an impact? They still have PK Subban, who is still a top player, you know, a top player in the league. But I give, and they have a new coach who's got a lot of experience and is hungry to win again as a coach. But I give him almost no chance because of the division they're in. I think an improvement from the Devils will be kind of what Tom Fitzgerald, their GM, has said is, you know, let's play in a lot of one goal games. Let's see how we handle that. Let's be in games. Let's be competitive, because they were not competitive for a lot of games, especially in the first half last season.
Yeah, and that may be true, and maybe I should have said most improved instead of, you know, the team that makes the playoffs. I think that division is a detriment to any team that's looking to make the jump. But I think they're, you know, they're better than Detroit. I think they're better than Anaheim. I think, you know, they're probably going to be in the same place as the Kings by the time this is all done. So that's that. You're right. Maybe I should have left it there, that they'll be the most improved and the most fun to watch out of all those teams that are trying to make improvements. But the playoffs may be a bridge too far.
Yeah. All right. I definitely can see that. All right. Last thing we'll do before we close this out, and we're going to do this week, and we'll do it next week. Sean, I'm going to say three words to you, and you just say whatever you want after that. You ready?
Ready.
All right. World Juniors, go.
That was only two words, Dan.
World Juniors, go. Three words.
All right.
All right. I mean by that is I give you the floor to talk about the World Juniors. Go.
All right. And it's a great conversation. Look, we talked about it a little bit with Ralph Kruger, with Dylan Cousins, who's been on fire for Canada. But look, I drew the short straw on Saturday, and I had to do the roundup for the games. And you wouldn't believe the traffic that the World Juniors gets on our site. People love this tournament. Like, all the traffic must be coming from Canada, according to you, because nobody in the States cares about it. But that's not true.
It's not true. No, it's not.
But that's not true. Anyway. But I drew the short straw on Saturday, right? And there were three games. One was 7-1. Then yeah. Canada was 16-2 against the Germany team. Germany team that only had 14 players.
Ridiculous. Right? 16 goals. I found that to be completely absurd, but go ahead.
And then the U.S., who had lost their first game, beat Austria 11-0. And all of a sudden, here comes everybody. Oh, the World Juniors, it's a bloated tournament. Get these teams out of here. They don't belong on the world stage. Let them go have their own tournament. Let's keep it to five teams, six teams, whatever it is. Less than 24 hours later, here come the big bad Canadians. Greatest team ever assembled in World Junior history. 16 forwards, all first round picks. Nobody can hold a candle to this team. Slovakia, 3-1. It was 2-1 at the end of the game. Empty net goal decides it. People were sweating, right? Now here comes the Czechs. They lost 7-1. Now they got to play the big bad Russians. Igor Larionov's their coach. All kinds of talent everywhere you go. The best goalie in the tournament. 2-0, Czech Republic. The celebration after that game. I stayed up. I watched it. It was 12:30 in the morning. The celebration after that game is what the World Juniors are about. These kids don't care that they get their teeth kicked in by great teams. They don't care. They have a chance to pull an upset that they'll live with the rest of their lives, that they'll always remember. And that's what they play for. They don't care that they lost 16-2. Look, the Austrians lost 11-0 to the Americans. Their goalie, I can't say his last name. It's like Raringer. It has like 14 letters in it and a lot of consonants. He played so well that he was the player of the game, losing 11-0. He made 53 saves, and he tired himself out so bad that he got cramps and had to be carried off the ice in the third period. It was one of the greatest performances I've ever seen, right up there with Ron Tugnutt when he made 73 saves against the Bruins back in the day in overtime. That's what these kids live for. He will have that memory for the rest of his life, and you want to take it away from him because you feel uncomfortable watching a team lose 16-2? The Germans don't care. They're going to get all their players back, and they're going to finish third in their division, in their pool, and they're going to get to play another game, and they're going to get another chance at an upset, right? And Tim Stutzel is going to get another chance. He sat in that game, and he banged his stick and tried to break it over the boards. He was so mad about what was happening. Now he gets another chance, and that's all he wants. These kids are competitive. They want to beat somebody, and they want to make a memory they're going to live with forever, and it's not for us to take it away from them. Rant over. Soapbox put away.
And that is Sean Rourke on the World Juniors. That segment is now over. And I think we gotta leave it right there.
If we can get Bob Bender, our producer, to sponsor the segment.
Yeah, it's got one more week, by the way.
We could get a big sponsorship for everybody's going to tune in for the last one now.
Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe two. We'll see. We'll see when we do the next podcast next week. But anyway, good rant. Very good rant and good show. It was great to get Ralph Kruger on. We talked a lot about the news and notes as well from around the league. So, Sean, I mean, camp's open Thursday, starting them out. I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
I may not go to bed between now and then. I'm so excited.
All right. Well, anyway, until then, well, and even after then, of course, hope you enjoy the hockey. Enjoy the World Juniors, as Sean so eloquently demands you to do. And everybody stay safe out there.